Welcome to The Kitchen Table, a show dedicated to helping you escape diet culture, gain trust with food, honor your body, and live a brighter life. Hello, and welcome back to The Kitchen Table. I am so glad you're here. I'm your host, Alicia Brown, an anti-diet registered dietitian nutritionist. Oh, and everyone, I've got such a great episode in store for you here because I've got our guest today. That's Stephanie Bonastia, who is a diet culture recovery coach specializing in women, helping them overcome binge eating and body image issues. She holds degrees in human development and psychology and occupational therapy, with a certification in integrative health coaching. She's currently working on her intuitive eating counselor certification as well. After struggling with multiple eating disorders for 25 years, Stephanie experienced her own recovery with the help of a coach and plenty of self-exploration. She considers her boots on the ground experience of recovery her most teachable asset. She lives in New Jersey with her husband and three daughters. And right now, I wish you could all see she is coming to us from her closet, which is like my favorite thing in the world. If you follow Stephanie, which you have to follow Stephanie, you'll see her do these like closet talks from her closet. You call them closet conversations, right?
Closet coaching.
Closet coaching. Yeah.
Yes. They're brilliant. Thank you. It's like a brand now. It's become my thing.
I love it.
Yeah. I was telling you that it started when COVID started because it became like my new home office because I had nowhere else to go where my kids weren't going to like interrupt me. So it's become the closet and it's my favorite place in the house now.
I so appreciate it. And the talks that you give on your stories, I was saying to you before, are just like marvelous. So hitting up your stories and gleaning all of your insights really is what prompted me to say, hey, like, can you meet me at the kitchen table? Can you come on? Aww. We've got stuff to talk about. We have to widen your voice.
Thank you.
Really have to talk to my audience on here. So thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. I'm excited to talk to you today.
Yes. And we were going to uncover a little bit about body image and comparison stuff. You know, like social media is just, you know, getting right into it. There's so much comparison happening on social media and there's a lot of nutrition information and comparison and, you know, comparison with nutrition information and also amongst fitness influencers and modeling type stuff, you know, a lot of photos of people and before and after transformation photos. And we can't help but sometimes look at a photo and maybe feel a little bit triggered. Where do you think some of that comes from? Or what have you experienced yourself or maybe in your experiences with clients in terms of how to navigate maybe social media in comparison?
So I find that a lot of the clients that come to me initially are following accounts that some of them might be well-intentioned in terms of, somebody who's influencing based on, you know, their eating disorder recovery. Some have already been through recovery. Others are going through it. And then there's other accounts they're following that are more like health and wellness based. And so those seem a lot more innocuous and they seem like they're really, you know, part of the anti-diet message. In fact, I think some of my clients really believe that that's, or they come into our sessions believing that this is, you know, that they're doing this for their health. And I think that's where it gets tricky because, or it's one of the areas anyway, because I think that wellness culture is really diet culture in disguise at this point. And I think that's something you only are really see after you're able to look like with a critical eye at what's going on and you really get familiar with what anti-diet means. And you start to see that wellness is just the new form of dieting. And it's about moralizing food and what's good and what's bad and what's clean eating, you know? And so people are following these accounts thinking that they're doing something in their best interest. And a lot of times you're seeing those before and afters, you're seeing the judgment of certain types of food and the elevation of other types of food. And it's making people feel really bad because they're not healthy enough, let alone not thin enough. So it's like almost like this sneaky way that comparison is getting in to, to our culture now, aside from just your regular weight loss accounts and, you know, blatant sort of here, look at me now, I lost all this weight kind of things. Yeah. So
So it feels like diet culture, like people know that the shakes and the detoxes aren't working. Right. They know like the water fast maybe isn't working, right? Like there's blatant forms of like dieting and diet culture. But now it's like a subset of that. Mm. We have like this wellness culture that you're bringing to the surface where like these dieting messages are a little sneakier. Mm-hmm. And they're like embedded within this greater concept of like wellness and glow. Yeah. And feel great in your skin and don't restrict, but also lose weight, right? Right? So it's just like, oh, that sounds so wonderful. And yeah, navigating that totally is so tricky. So can you break down for a little bit more really what this wellness culture, wellness diet culture, we could say, really is, yeah, or where it's really coming from?
So it's funny because before I was an anti-diet coach, I was a health coach, and mm-hmm, I still consider myself a holistic health coach, but I understand health to mean something very different now than when I originally went into health coaching. Mm-hmm. So, I had an eating disorder since I was a teenager, and mm-hmm, it had morphed into all different variations of binge eating and bulimia. And at one point I was anorexic also. And I just sort of bounced around from one to the next. And when I started having kids, I think just something in me was like, well, I have to embrace health for their sake now. And it was such an easy slide into orthorexia, which I'm not sure if your audience is familiar, but you know, with the obsession with clean eating and just becoming really completely focused on eating all organic, non-GMO. Mm-hmm. My pantry changed from me being like diety type foods and mm-hmm, low calorie or low carb or low fat to just, I mean, I had a criteria of what was allowed in my house after a while. Mm-hmm. And basically what happened was my eating disorder just took on a new form. And I believe that that's what's happening to a lot of people, especially in fitness culture and just this wellness, I think, has become the new socially sanctioned way of dieting and having an eating disorder in a lot of cases with fasting and paleo. And you can cut out entire food groups or windows of time that you're allowed to eat and call it health. And it's funny because I actually know Jason Fung, who started intermittent fasting as a way to treat his diabetic clients. Mm. He's a friend. He's a my best friend's cousin, and so I know that this started in a good place in terms of him trying to really help people who are struggling with diabetes. And he was having success, but it got completely hijacked by by wellness. And mm, now you find people who have no underlying conditions. They do not have diabetes. They do not have metabolic disorders that mm, need to be addressed. They're just looking to lose weight, but it's mm, so much easier to call it health. And, you know, I just want more energy, or I just, you know, some people will say it's for weight loss, but it's always alongside all these other more acceptable, you know, ways of, you know, of what you're saying, what you're doing. But it's sneaky, and it's, you know, wellness is something we're taught to, you know, strive for. So it's, how mm-hmm, can you argue with it, you know? And so I think that's how it gets in the back door.
Absolutely. And thank you for sharing your experience, kind of talking about how your disordered eating kind of just changed shape from being more mm-hmm, of the classic kind of dieting, more than kind of morphing its way into more of this orthorexia type behavior, which just to kind of clue the audience in on that and our people listening, you know, orthorexia is really, yes, like that hyperfixation on clean eating, really considering the source of a food, the quality of the food. I talked about this in a prior episode, actually, the first Q&A episode that I did recently, actually, where it was like we took part the differences between what healthy eating is and then what a healthy relationship with food looks like instead.
That's great. Yeah.
You know, so kind of like taking those two apart. And so I think it's really clear for them to see now that, like, yes, okay, that is actually just kind of another form of disordered eating. And now, how do we heal that relationship with food? So,
yeah.
Right? Like, that's the constant strive that we constantly get into, right? Like, wellness on top of wellness. How can we appease wellness culture now while trying to appease diet culture? And that's impossible, right? So we'll still never eat clean enough. We'll never still be thin enough, no matter how much we try. We kind of get into that downward spiral.
Totally. What a great way of saying it. Yeah, because it's always a moving target, the same way that nutrition is. It's like, well, you know, in one sense, you know, what I remember when I was growing up, like having a big butt was like not cool. It was like not okay. You had to have the smallest of everything. And now that hourglass figures on Kim Kardashian has reinvented what, you know, what your body shape is supposed to look like. And you can never get it right because it's always changing. And yeah, same for nutrition, because, you know, you've got groups on one side saying that to eat only fat and meat and no carbs. And then another, you know, another group saying that that's terrible and that's toxic, and you can't get it right. There is no getting it right. And I remember at one point just really almost believing, I remember just feeling like so boxed in to a corner because I felt like any choice I was making around food was wrong, or I could identify all the ways it might be harmful instead of the ways that it was giving me joy or pleasure or nourishment. I just, that it no longer was about that. And that's, I had an idea that something was wrong there. And I think a lot of people do. I think that there's people out there who understand that there's something off about feeling this way and thinking so much about food, you know, and over fixating on it. But how to identify that is really hard because it's health, you know? So, you know, it's hard to see.
Of course we want to do the best thing for ourselves. Of course we know nutrition is something that can make us feel and be healthy and offer us energy and longevity. But yes, there's like this little intuitive hit that we have that I so get that where you're getting that. And it's like that little thing that says, I don't know if I'm doing this exactly right. This is taking a lot of my time. Is everybody else taking all this time thinking about food? Is everyone else, you know, pre-planning all of their meals, doing all this meal prep? There might be that, like that little thing that says, you know, inside of you, you know, thinking like, gosh, this could be a lot easier, right? This could be changed. Am I doing this as a service to myself? And at what point in that and your kind of like in wellness culture did you decide that for yourself that you wanted to explore now something different to heal your relationship with food?
So I have 3 kids and I had hit a point where I saw my orthorexia merging with my binge eating, because of course the more I was restricting what I was allowed to eat, even in terms of healthy foods and not, you know, not healthy foods, I was so limited in terms of what I was eating at that point that my binging really ramped up. So my binge eating was like equivalent at that point to how, you know, to my orthorexia. And I just kind of like, I was almost 40 and I was, you know, this birthday was like looming ahead of me. And I was like, oh my gosh, I've been doing this since I was 15 or 16 years old and nothing is changing. It's just taking different shapes. And I also at the time was a sugar detox coach. So I was taking people through these 21 days of no sugar and no so much other stuff. It was beyond just sugar. And I felt wrong. I felt like I watched people become afraid of blueberries. I watched people who swore off grapes and banana and, you know, and sweet potatoes. And something about that just hit me somewhere. And I knew, and I kind of was on the fence straddling this for a while where I was like, I think I'm going to run another detox program, but I'm going to really emphasize, you know, like you shouldn't be, I mean, you know, I just kind of had this different approach to how strict it should be, and eventually realized, I don't want to raise my kids like this. My kids are watching this now and my kids, I'm having different dinners to make up for my binge yesterday than my kids, and they're getting older and now they can see, and something needs to change because I can, all of a sudden I just saw the disorder in all of it. It like hit me like a ton of bricks. I don't know what exactly it was, all of it, I guess. And I picked up a copy of The Fuck It Diet by Caroline Dooner, which I had seen. Now at this point, I was just kind of entering Instagram. So I had a lot in my feed that was what we talked about earlier, which was like the health and the sugar detox and all that comparison going on. And of course, if you fill your feed with that, you're definitely comparing yourself constantly to oh, well, she's having kale smoothie for, you know, I need to be, I guess I should be, you know, and you're doing that constantly. But I started trickling in anti-diet accounts that I had just kind of happened across.
Yeah.
And at first I really, I rejected them. And a lot of them I unfollowed because they were just too real. And, but something got in my head around it. And, that book came up as a, it was recommended by someone in one of those accounts that I was following. And I read that book, and that was where I was like, my eyes just opened and I was like, oh my God.
Mm.
And that's where my recovery started.
That is so amazing. Thank you for sharing that. And I think the same rings true in my own experience in so many ways, kind of shifting from the dieting paradigm into the intuitive eating paradigm and kind of feeling like this isn't quite right. Seeing the guilt and the shame and the embarrassment from the clients that we worked with. And then in our own experience too, just like really having it in our face that like we need to change our relationship with food and we need to help others do the same. And here's the way to do it. And through finding that and through finding the hope in that is really what seems like prompted you to kind of dive into that intuitive eating work. Does that feel true?
Yes, because what happened was I actually recovered. And coming from a place where I had literally, I mean, my eating disorder, like I said, it started in my teens. And so for almost 25 years, I was living this way. And I was miserable. And I always was waiting for the next, something around the corner was going to fix me, always. And nothing was doing it. And after a year of being in recovery and really giving myself permission to eat whatever I wanted and to listen to my body and to just keep trusting it, I stopped binging. I mean, my eating became like a normal person. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't think that was possible at all for me. And that was, I mean, that is such a powerful experience when you really are in the trenches feeling like I'm just broken. Like, there's no saving me. I can never keep ice cream in my freezer and not eat all of it. That just isn't how I'm made. And to believe that wholeheartedly, and then to find that you've forgotten about the ice cream in your freezer is something that, I mean, from there, I knew that that was something so powerful that had, it's not presented, you know, it's not presented to most of the, you know, of our culture. It's not a way through because it wouldn't serve diet culture to be telling people they have permission.
Oh, of course not. It wouldn't be this like multi-billion-dollar industry that it is that keeps us coming back, right?
Yeah. And so it's almost like you get a little incited about it. You're kind of, you know, I was kind of like, this is not okay. And so I want to bring this to as many. And honestly, I just, particularly for people who binge eat and who, I really have such a spot in my heart for people who wake up in the morning having binged the day before and feeling that feeling of like, mm-hmm. oh my God, what did I do? I now have to make up for this again. Mm-hmm. And I just know how that feels. I was a coach already from being a health coach, but I understood that like my passion was going to be to get people to go from that place of waking up feeling the binge hangover to a place of freedom because there's so much more to life and people deserve that. And it's not well represented out there.
I could not agree more. Do you see in your work, specifically with binge eating, do you see any connection between the conversation that we had prior on social media in comparison and binge eating and binge eating disorder?
Yeah. Yes. Particularly because I think people who binge eat are a lot of times really desperate to stop binge eating, of course. Mm. And so what they're doing is what I was doing, which is trying to figure out where the answer is. And it's always, we're always looking externally. So instead of, you know, going inward, which why would we do that? We can't trust ourselves to begin with. Let's find it outside. And so we're, you know, and now with social media being so available, we can just follow accounts of people who are eating healthy because we think that that's what we're doing wrong. We think that that's the whole problem, that we just don't know how to eat right. So we follow these accounts of people who are supposed to teach us that. And then we see, oh, they're eating this for breakfast, you know, the smoothies and the vegetables, and they're not having any processed foods. And look at how wonderful their life looks. I mean, it just really looks quite beautiful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's something you can kind of do for a little while. You're like, yeah, I got this. I'm good. I'm eating like, you know, this influencer and that one. And then you binge and you're also not seeing how many of those influencers are binging, because I know that that's happening a lot.
Absolutely.
Totally. I see that so much. But you're just becoming basically more convinced that you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
And I think that that's where binging, because binging is all about shame too. I mean, there's so much shame involved and something about you that just feels wrong. And this fuels that feeling of shame. I think that comparison fuels it. And it's also pointing you in the wrong direction in terms of where you're looking to heal. I think that we're so desperate to heal and we're looking in the wrong places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it seems like there's this like pursuit of discovering more nutrition information using social media, like thinking like, oh, they look this way and they eat this way. If I do those same things, I could achieve that too. And maybe even to a greater extent, I could achieve that life too for myself.
Right, right.
Look at their body and look at their bright, white, beautiful feed and life, you know, and she's smiling in every photo. It's honestly such a different reality. And then when we think about ourselves and our own struggles with food, we can really feel like we're not doing things right. We're doing things wrong. What's wrong with us that we're not figuring it out? When really what you're bringing to the surface here is that like there's nothing wrong with us, and that influencer that we're actually seeing on social media might have a really struggling relationship with food, or it's just not exactly the reality. It's like the virtual reality might not actually be the actual reality.
Definitely.
And separating those two as we're surfing on social media is just sometimes so impossible due to the types of ways that we're consuming information nowadays.
Yeah. And I think we want to see it like that. I think that when you're in this dark place or this place where you feel like you're just, you know, down in this dark place, you look to these people as like, okay, well, this is the hope of if I do get it right, if I manage to figure this out, this is what is in store for me. And so we want to idealize something because we feel like we can maybe do that if we just get it right. That life isn't even, I mean, you see the gleaming white countertops and like, the feed that's like perfectly, the color scheme is perfect. And I get it. I mean, it's a business to a certain extent, we do have, you know, curated feeds, but I think there's a big misrepresentation about what's going on. And I think a lot of people in that space particularly are struggling with eating disorders or disordered eating. A lot, if not most of the time.
Mm-hmm. So it just brings to the surface how much we need to be talking about this and normalizing these experiences, right? Normalizing these struggles that we have with food, because they're so prevalent, even though they might not be depicted on social media.
Yeah.
What is some advice that you might have for somebody that really feels triggered on social media, maybe even feeling triggered into a binge or feeling triggered into maybe disordered eating behaviors due to what they're seeing on social media? What can we change about that landscape or how we consume that information?
I think sometimes people are afraid to let go. And so, you know, obviously, you know, one of the first things we say is, okay, well, unfollow those accounts that are triggering you. And that's a great, if you can do that, that's the first place to go. If something in you is responding to somebody's feed, even if they're helping you on some days, but on other days, something about it just feels, it triggers. To get to know those triggers in yourself and to be able to say, you know what, this is not helping me. This is harming me even though they've got great recipes. I hear that a lot from clients who are like, but she's got such great recipes.
Yeah.
And so some people are afraid to unfollow because I don't know, maybe they're holding on to this idea that maybe it can work out for them, or, you know, they're afraid to jump into like an intuitive eating feed because that's a lot, it's loaded, you know, that's giving up a lot of, ideals that we hold to be true. And so I think, you know, you can mute accounts that are making you feel bad. But I think if that seems scary, the concept of like adding in other accounts. So if you feel like you just can't let go of whoever it is, find other accounts under the hashtag anti-diet or intuitive eating or non-diet approach, or if you're struggling with an eating disorder, even, you know, eating disorder recovery, anything there, you can find, I mean, there is a large community of us, right? I mean, yes. Even though we're like a pebble in the sand compared to the rest of the people out there, but there's so many wonderful accounts and aimed at different, like, specific things. There's some people who are, you know, therapists. There are some people who are coaches. There are some people who have just gone through it and they're sharing their journeys. People have different approaches in terms of, like, they're funnier or some are really serious, and you can find what speaks to you if you look for it. And yeah. So just to know that it's actually there, it's just hiding. And you have to seek it out, but you can. And if you start adding those and peppering them into your feed, it will slowly start to change the way that you're thinking. And even if it's just planting seeds that need time to grow, that's how I started, really, is just like, little by little. And I, at my comfort level, I just started to accept more and more of it. But, you know, I think that's a way to challenge what we're doing to ourselves on social media, because social media can be very toxic for sure, but it can also be incredibly empowering and helpful, which doesn't get talked about as much as the negative aspects of social media.
Oh, totally. I think social media can be such a force for good.
Yeah.
If we can recognize the ways that it's not serving us.
Yeah.
And so I love how you kind of unpack there and say, you know, kind of backing up and just saying, look, if you're feeling like this isn't serving you, or you feel like you could add some different perspectives into your feed to start to pepper them in, trickle them in, and start to see things in a different way, you can almost use that force for good. And I so believe in that. And I feel like you're such a light in this space on social media for that reason, a light amongst all of this darkness. And speaking of which, you had some stories recently about confirmation bias. And I feel like this could be pulled up here as well. As you're talking about, like, finding it hard to, like, separate yourself from the dieting messages, or finding it hard to, like, separate or distance ourselves from the things that we know to be true. Because when we hear our narratives that we believe recited over and over again, they become more solidified, they become more instilled. And that's what confirmation bias is, yeah. Right? We like to hear like-minded advice and opinions and things that fuel things we already know. So do you have any advice or suggestions on how to, like, separate ourselves from that and kind of embrace a new idea, or like a conventional idea, like intuitive eating?
Yeah. So I think it goes against a lot of human nature to challenge that, of course, because it's uncomfortable and it's like, it shakes up our whole way of knowing. So I always, like, I'm a big fan of paying attention to your triggers. And so if there is something that, like, just makes you a little uncomfortable, you know, where you feel like you want to shut it off, or you want to scroll past, or you feel this kind of intense, like, no, rejection of this idea, to stop exactly there and to ask yourself why, and to really think through it instead of rushing past it, and to ask yourself why you so strongly reject this. And can you actually think through that and come up with a reason that, you know, you feel right, that feels solid, or is it bringing up more questions that you're just not ready to deal with? And it's not that you have to jump into the pool, you know, and like all it's cold turkey and and face all this, because it's incredibly scary. But I used to just bookmark some of the posts that I knew spoke to me somewhere, like they just resonate somewhere, and I didn't know why exactly, but I just felt like something about whatever was said meant something, and I would bookmark it and move along. And I think in doing that, your brain takes note of what you've bookmarked, and it just grabs onto it a little, and it puts it somewhere in the back of your mind and, like, store files it away. And then it'll bring it up again when the time is right. And it'll bring it up again when things start to unfold in a certain way, or you might go back and look at your saved files and you'll see, and it'll suddenly make sense because your mind's been working on it.
And
I like to use those kind of little tricks to try to for people, especially if you're not ready to really, and there's always a next level of what, you know, what we can do next for me, for you, for anyone at any point in your journey. There's always the next thing of, what am I ready to learn now?
Yes.
And so a lot of times we have a little bit of resistance because what you said, because we're comfortable with what we know to be true. And that's very, it organizes our world, but, you know, to challenge that, when something speaks to us in our bodies is only going to help us grow.
Totally. And I think there's something so deeply to be said here. And that's the difference between like what we've learned to be true and what we know to be true, right? So like the knowing to be true is what you've alluded to like those feelings in your gut. And even to like elaborate on that more, Stephanie, like what do you think of the idea of just like getting familiar with that triggering feeling in your body for when something like doesn't feel right. Like, as you said, like just pause right there and just stop and think about why that didn't resonate with you. If we took that a step further, could we say like, how did that feel? Like where in your body did we feel that not resonating? Because that's that like little intuitive hit that said, ooh, this isn't quite right. And I love that. And I think the more we get familiar with that not sitting right kind of feeling, the more we can see that play out in our food experiences and how we view our body and this comparison idea and beyond into like making greater decisions in life. Does that feel true like in your experience or your experience with clients?
Yes, and 100%. And you're right, not just in terms of food, it grows because once you get familiar with your own intuition, I mean, that carries you everywhere. Yeah. And you start to recognize it more and more and you're like, oh, there it is. This means I have to pay attention. And that extends, you know, throughout our lives. And it's a skill to develop. So if you can start, and I have found like such you know, analogies with food and life in general. So much of my food recovery has informed the rest of my life in terms of other things, you know, just the way your plate reflects your everything. And so I can think of, I mean, just yesterday I had a moment of that intuition speaking. Something just felt wrong about something. And I knew it. I recognized that feeling in me. My head gets all like swimmy and I forget what I'm doing. I forget what I've previously been talking about. I'm like on a path and I just get like, almost like, where am I? Like, that's how I feel when that happens to me. And that's when I'm like, oh, something is off here. What is it? Because your brain will try to convince you that all is well, we can make sense of this. But your body's like, no, like let's rethink this.
I'm sure for those listening right now, like they can pinpoint maybe moments in their life where their head just wants to take over and they feel just totally disconnected from their bodies. Like there's this facade over here that says, we got this all under control. Yeah. It's no problem. It's like that meme where like there's fire everywhere. And then it says like, we're okay. Everything is okay. Have you seen that? It's like 2020. We're fine. And it's like, we're actually fine. We can recognize sometimes that we're like not fine really more when we like tap into the body and really truly listen to it and let those sensations really guide us. I so feel that. And so in terms of like body image now, like kind of crossing over from like those intuitive hits that come from like feeling like things aren't really jiving with us and the messages that we've received on social media and maybe peppering in some more messages that we feel like maybe make us feel more expansive in our bodies. Do you have any insights to share like when we feel kind of like triggered in our bodies or triggered like in our own skin or how our clothes feel kind of in that realm in a similar way? Because I think that that transcends and connects, you know, we see comparison happen on social media. We're aspiring to be like these people, but then when we turn off social media and we see ourselves, we can see ourselves differently. So do you have any advice or insights to lend for us on how we can view ourselves maybe in a different way, in a similar way that we talked about disconnecting from comparison?
Yeah. So, well, actually I can, one thing that has really helped me with that, because you're right, it's like you get in the zone on social media and then you go into your real life and you're like, ugh, you know, it just doesn't always translate. But I have started, and I hate to keep using social media as the avenue, but I started and maybe it's relevant because I think the media has really influenced what we deem to look normal. And then we look in the mirror and we see like, that doesn't look like everything that I see, you know, like the pictures in the, on the, you know, in the magazines and the, on TV and the mannequins in the store, although no one's shopping now, but you know, like when you're flipping through social media, and you're seeing for clothing, you know, clothing advertisements, and it looks different on my body than it does there. So I have started to, actually I haven't started, I've been doing this all along. I'm a big fan of peppering things in. In my stories, I pepper in photographs of women in all diverse body sizes and colors and shapes, and even occasionally put men in there too, just to start to train our brains to or untrain our brains to see things only in a certain way. And that has helped both my followers that I get feedback from and me. I realize that I am able, like I look at my own body and I see it in a way that is, it's normalized to me. And it doesn't shock me when I look and I see something that doesn't look like a perfectly, you know, like a model type or, you know, a slender woman. I have curves and I have now been just bringing so much more of that into my visual diet that I now it's assimilated and I just don't see it as different anymore. It's something that I'm like really working on myself all the time. And I have my clients work on too. Mm-hmm. And not just in social media, but to pay attention to more of this as you're moving around, you know, as who you're comparing yourself to on the street or, you know, in the shopping mall, and just making sure that you're really seeing that there's a wide range of bodies everywhere and to like stop the judgment that's going on in your head because that's what you've been programmed to do. But that actually it's perfectly normal to have a body size. In fact, I think only 2-3% of women are represented in media. The rest
is that true?
Yeah, I think it's the highest it would be is 5%. I think it's like 2-3% of women look like what 98% of the media is showing us.
I believe.
So our concept of what our bodies are supposed to look like, or it's completely skewed. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to kind of unskew, or at least to start defining beauty, or not even beauty, but just humanness, as more than just one body type, and to be able to see a range of sizes as completely normal. And yeah, we can even start at normal if beautiful is too far a stretch, which is sometimes it can be, but even just to be normal so that we're not looking in the mirror and being like, ugh, you know, just disgusted at our body, you know, because if we can understand that this is what bodies look like, then all of a sudden it's kind of more neutral.
Yes. And I love the thought of adding in more body diversity into our visual diets on social media. Mm-hmm. I think that is so powerful. And that's, again, how we can use social media in a way to our advantage, because we can curate that ourselves. We can follow more accounts that have more body diversity, et cetera. Diversity of all kinds, of course, to just normalize that experience. And you had something in there that you said about judgment, and you said that we're programmed to maybe be judgmental. Could you dive into that maybe just a little bit more?
Yeah. I think we're raised in a culture that's pretty judgmental against larger body sizes. I mean, we learn this, I think, you know, if you don't grow up in a household where your parents are saying, you know, she should watch her weight, or, you know, she can't wear that, she shouldn't wear that type of thing, you know, or even just when you're, you know, I remember when I was growing up and I was, you know, trying things on in the dressing room, and my mom innocuously, I mean, she didn't mean any harm, but she would say, that's not flattering for you. Or, you know, just to understand that there's a way to look, and then there's a way to not look. Mm-hmm. And that these judgments are sometimes harsh and outright, but they're also sometimes subtle and we just internalize.
Yes.
And like, I mean, there's also, I just posted something the other day about how there's 14 or 15 fat jokes in the average sitcom that's aimed at a family sitcom. Mm-hmm. So these, you know, these messages are coming at us all the time under our awareness, sometimes, you know, sometimes blatantly and other times subliminally, constantly since we're little. And so we grow up believing that too. I mean, we internalize it, and then we do it, and then we teach our kids. And so I think that we're constantly judging ourselves and others because that's what people seem to do. Mm-hmm. And I think recovery is a lot of undoing and unlearning, number one, that those things aren't even true, and that those are judgments, mm-hmm. not facts. And number two, that like, shame doesn't help anyone change. And so to live a more self-compassionate and to be compassionate to others too, and to stop using our bodies as a form of, as a reason to judge anyone, helps us heal. I mean, in more ways than just food and body. It just helps us stop, you know, that judgment cycle in general.
Absolutely. Oh, I'm so glad that we uncovered this. And I think that it's so true that as we heal our relationships with food in our body, we have to release some of that judgment. First, maybe towards ourselves, which then projects in the ways that we maybe judge others less and their appearances less, which then maybe opens us up to seeing people in their glory as they are beyond their body size, right? And that's something that maybe we're not trained to do. Maybe that's something that our, you know, our culture doesn't facilitate us or facilitate or support us with. Maybe it's so appearance-based, maybe it's so superficial, but I think doing maybe the deeper work of that food and body stuff can help us see ourselves more deeply and then see others more deeply too. I think that that's so beautiful the way you said that.
Oh, I like what you said. I just really like that. Yeah, it's exactly right.
Yeah.
Because how many times, you know, have you, I know that I'm guilty of that where, I mean, I was raised in an environment where, we judged on appearance first, and it was not out. It wasn't taught directly like that, but it's just what happened. And so you would sometimes, you know, you see someone and you write them off as, because based on whatever it is you see, you know, that they, you attribute to them some kind of characteristic that, you know, based on something they're wearing or they're not wearing, or and you just have these judgments and you put them in a box and you categorize them as such. And the truth is, and the more of this work I do, and the more that I've been following all huge range of diversities, and not just in bodies but everything, there's we're all human. There's so much good. There's so much more to us than these categories that we've learned to put ourselves in.
Absolutely. We're so much more interesting than our body size. It's not the most interesting thing about us. It's not the most glamorous thing about us. I want to see your personality. I want to see your life. I want to see what lights you up, right? I want to know what you do in your family and your beliefs. You know, we are so complex and interesting, but I think what so happens is that food and body stuff just consumes us and becomes such a focus, kind of going back to your conversation of, you know, that clean eating kind of framework or being really entrenched in this wellness / dieting culture. That becomes so much of our reality sometimes that we forget how interesting incorporated beings we are.
I know.
You know, and I think that, you know, as we're saying and kind of uncovering in this episode so beautifully, is that when we like kind of uncover all of those layers, we kind of get through all of that stuff, we can see, oh my gosh, there's so much more to us and there's so much more to life other than weight loss.
Yeah, definitely. 100%.
Oh, absolutely. Do you have anything to add to this conversation in terms of comparison, body image, judgment, and doing the deeper work?
Well, just what you were just saying just now, I lost my train of thought there.
Happens all the time. The story of my life.
And you said something and I was like, oh, when you were talking about how much more there is to us. Yeah. So I was speaking with a client yesterday and she started crying at one point. She's 47 and she is just coming out of diet culture. And she kind of said, she was like, I can't believe that there can be more to my life than I thought this was it. I mean, she's been living like this for so long. And she's like, we started talking about her interests and what she actually wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And she said, I can't believe this is accessible to me. And I just didn't have the energy to focus on my own interests. I mean, I healed and I started this business and I feel more fulfilled than I've ever felt in my entire life. And it happened after I healed and made space for it. So, although that doesn't go along with the comparison syndrome necessarily, it's just a matter of, instead of looking externally at how we measure up to others and looking outside of ourselves to see who we are, that this healing process is part of going inward and figuring out who you are. And then that gives you this solid footing for, you know, being able to go on social media and see what other people are doing and not feel like you're falling short because you have identified who you are and you don't need that from elsewhere anymore.
Absolutely. It's so amazing that in the quest of discovering who our true and authentic selves are, what becomes accessible to us.
Yeah.
And it's really cool for us and witnessing you and your fulfilling work as you're doing with your clients, witnessing you and that expansion of helping facilitate people rediscover who they are, really synonymous with my work as well. And getting to witness, you know, that transformation into helping them living brighter, bolder, more purposeful mm-hmm. lives.
Yeah. Oh, Stephanie,
thank you so much for all of this, like, absolute mic drop wisdom shared on this podcast today. Share with everyone where they can find you, where they can connect with you, how they can work with you. Can you just give them a quick rundown?
Yeah.
All of the ways that they can connect.
Yeah. So I'm on social media as I am Stephanie Michelle, and you spell Stephanie with an F and Michelle with one L. I know my parents made it really hard. But I'm on Facebook and I'm on Instagram there. And I also have a private Facebook group that is for people who want to kind of have more of an intimate conversation around ditching diet culture, which is called Unsubscribers. You'd have to search for it there. But that's where you can find me on social media. And I also have a website, iamstephaniemichelle.com. And on there, you can find ways to connect with me to do one-to-one coaching. I do text coaching. And I'm in the process of creating a group program that's going to be 8 modules long that deep dives into lots of stuff like we talked about today, thoughts, emotions, binge eating, body image, and all of it. So stay tuned for that too.
That is amazing. And I saw you post that on your story. I'm on your stories all the time.
I feel like awesome. I love
that. Is it creepy that I always say?
No, I love when people are on my stories. I feel like that's where like my kitchen table is, you know, it's like, that's where we chat.
It is wonderful that everyone has to go over to Stephanie's kitchen table on her stories. I was just going to say, I saw you post about your modules that you're setting up. That seems so exciting to have that course laid out. Congratulations to you on that. Everyone's got to know about it. Connect with you, potentially sign up. And is there any like one last bit of advice that you might give to somebody who's maybe contemplating intuitive eating, but they're on the fence? You know, is there anything that one last little nugget of wisdom that you have to share as we wrap up today?
Somebody said this much more beautifully than I'm about to, because I can't remember how they phrased it. But, you know, I think there's only so far that like knowledge will take you, and you know, collecting all this information and knowing this stuff. And, you know, we want to know more and do read the self-help books or listen to the podcasts. And then we have it all inside, and it's the action that really propels us forward. So, you know, just taking the next step from knowledge to action brings you to the next level of healing. So how you can actually take what you're learning and integrate it into doing something that's going to bring you to the next step, whether that's, you know, actually going and following other accounts like we talked about earlier, or diversifying your feed, or challenging your thoughts, or trying to pay attention to those triggers and actually, you know, follow through with them when they happen. You know, what's the action step that's going to get you moving? I'm a big advocate of taking those little leaps.
Taking a little leap, taking a comfortable leap, maybe sometimes an uncomfortable leap a little bit, but listening to the body and learning how to trust in it. Sometimes when it's uncomfortable, but really seeing that come to fruition and really understanding ourselves more in the process. Yeah. Stephanie, thank you so much for joining me at the kitchen table today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. This is great.
Yes, I so agree. Everyone go follow Stephanie, and I look forward to seeing everyone in the next episode of the kitchen table. Enjoy the day.